Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders Prospect Show. I am Adam Weiner, joined again by fan-sided MLB staff writer Eric Cole. Last week, his chair was occupied by former big league pitcher Brad Penny, but we fired Brad. Yeah, we fired Brad. We brought Eric back. No, Brad was a special guest. We loved having him. But my co-host is back this week. We hope to have more interviews in the future, of course. Both of us would love to do some more of those. Thank you for joining us. Noon Eastern on a Tuesday. That's how you know it's time for the Prospect Show. And it's time for the Super Regionals. The road to the College World Series has brought us one step closer to glory, and we're watching a couple of MLB draft prospects along the way, plus Jack Caglianone and someone we've talked about a lot on previous shows, got a big league shot and has been demoted again. Ronnie Mauricio as well, I think, coming up to the Mets. So if you've got Ronnie Mauricio prospect fatigue, maybe he will prove you wrong soon. And I actually said Caglianone instead of Caglione. I thought I learned my lesson, but you know what? Sometimes when you make mistakes like that, you just got to call it out like 8 seconds later so that no one gets mad at you. I said Marcello Meyer, and the whole comment section was like, Cello? And I was like, ugh. And I got defiant. And I was like, it could be either, but it's not. It's Marcello Meyer. And so it's Jack Caglione, and we're not pronouncing anybody's name wrong anymore. Eric Cole, we're not, right? We're not pronouncing anybody's name wrong anymore?
I make no promises. There's a couple draft prospects in particular that I'm pretty sure I'm going to get wrong, but at the same time, you know, it's kind of come par for the course. I'm excited to talk College World Series. I confess that my college baseball following tends to center on like top picks until I really dig into the guys that like into actually just draft prospects. Not necessarily, I don't have like a big college allegiance in the College World Series or anything like that, but I've been doing a little bit more this year, and it's actually been a lot of fun. The regionals were kind of crazy. A couple big teams are gone. Texas is out. Vandy's out. You know, a couple fun little teams, Coastal Carolina and Murray State, have made it to Super Regionals against all odds. So I'm excited to talk some of that with you guys, but also just to kind of talk a little bit more about the draft, because it's one of my favorite events of the year.
Oh, yeah, we're making it draft-centric, but if you weren't watching Ole Miss try to come back from 12-3 down last night against Murray State, you really missed out. I don't know how you don't complete that comeback, but we'll get to it, of course. You can have more of Eric's opinions and my opinions if you want. If you subscribe to The Moonshot, that is our weekly baseball email newsletter. We're the fan-sided MLB team, including Robert Murray, who will be back on tomorrow's show, 1 p.m. Eastern. We break down all the biggest stories in the big leagues with humor, insight, behind-the-scenes info. You can read that content and more on the Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com. That is fansided.com/baseball-insiders for the latest prospect. Accompaniment from Eric, weirdness, interviews from me. We have Todd Frazier on the Baseball Insiders last week. Sam Phelan was kind enough to do that interview. You could watch the video or you could read about it coming up soon on that feed. And then again, tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern, join Robert Murray and myself, or join us in the Discord. You get a private Q&A session in the Rumor Mill tier on Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern. A lot of times, and we kept track of all of them. I pronounced the name wrong about 2 minutes ago, and that's why we call the man Jack Cags, because it's way easier to do. He is joining the Kansas City Royals. Eric and I both in on the podcast before his debut. We didn't miss it. We are here, although Eric, before he left, said, I bet Jack Cags gets called up while I'm gone. And I was like, there's no way, probably soon, but no way. And then, yeah, yes way. Roman Anthony's still not a Red Sox. We think that's probably going to happen during this podcast, and if it does, we'll scream about it. But for now, we have Caglione up with the Royals and facing a natural rival in the St. Louis Cardinals this week in his first game, as long as they start him his first day up in the bigs. We know what this guy does. He hits 460-plus foot bombs. But early thoughts on how often you think he's going to be able to do it, whether there's going to be an adjustment period, and the potential that this could swing a playoff race, either the Central, probably not, or the wild card picture, almost certainly.
So this is the ultimate test, right? We talked to Jim Callis about this. We've talked about it. The only thing that has kept Caglione from getting more press than he has is that he's had this chase rate that has been kind of this boogeyman of this is going to be the thing that could get him, right? And now he's going to be up against the big league pitchers who are going to try to get him the chase out of the zone. And the question becomes, can he make contact, foul those pitches off? Can he lay off pitches that are way out of the zone? And can he continue the impact ball? I tend to think that he's going to kind of in the like the Nick Kurtz sort of way. Like he will have flashes, he will show power, but I don't think that big league pitchers are going to be giving him as much credit and make him have to really fight for some of those. Like he's not going to be seeing a lot of pitches over the plate until he proves that he can lay off the stuff that's out of the zone. And so like if he starts walking a bunch or he is able to fight off those pitches and kind of force pitchers to kind of throw in the strike zone, that could be really good. Again, I don't expect him to immediately become the best player in baseball, but I do think the talent is there to be an all-star level caliber player. Now, in terms of how this impacts the playoff race, of all the organizations that I thought would be super aggressive, I don't think I would have put the Royals in the top 10. You know, like we know the Angels, we know like the Braves will promote guys quickly. There's other contenders, like, you know, the Astros have moved guys quickly. We've seen teams like do this, but the Royals tend to take a really traditional approach of like moving guys up level by level. And instead they just ran Cags out there for a few games this year and figured out that he was a monster and just didn't waste any time doing it. Now the AL Central is is normally a division where I'd say this could make a big difference, except for the fact that the Tigers are somehow the best player team in baseball, which I did not have on my bingo card, but I'm very happy about. Thank you, Kurt. Thank you, Katrina. Go Tigers. But at the same time, I think you're right. I think it's more of a wild card impacting move. And I mean, the Royals are going to be in the middle of that. I mean, keep in mind that this is a really good pitching staff and they have Bobby Wood Jr. Well, now they'll have Caglione. And if they have that kind of power and he is able to get to it, then all of a sudden the Royals are a very dangerous team for any team to go against. Versus right now where like they have to kind of, they have to pitch really well. And the other team has to kind of, you know, not pitch so well and give up some damage to hitters that maybe aren't particularly exciting outside of Wood Jr. So now there's just more depth to the lineup. I think that the Royals are a playoff team right now. And assuming that Caglione, you know, does what he's even approaches what he could do, then I think they're a team that no one's going to want to face in the playoffs.
Yeah, Kurtz is a great comp. And I also think Kurtz makes sense because I thought he was going to flash the power potential immediately. It took him a surprisingly long time to leave the yard once. But before he went down with an injury, he had corrected to being a well above average offensive player. 114 OPS plus five bombs and under 100 at-bats. So is Caglione going to go yard tonight? Weirdly, I think yes. And then I would predict like a week plus gap before the next one. My lingering question with Cags, with Roman Anthony, with even Bubba Chandler, who we'll talk about a little bit later, there's been a lot of talk about the Super 2 deadline, and there's been a lot of talk about self-preservation and these teams that are scared of maybe somebody, maybe somebody wins Rookie of the Year, and then they cost us, oh God, wouldn't that be horrible if one of our top prospects won Rookie of the Year? Aren't we past that point already? Like, what would Caglione or Roman Anthony have to do to win the Rookie of the Year from just mid-June on? I feel like, I guess no clear-cut winner in the AL right now, but disrespectful to Jacob Wilson to say, like, yeah, we still have no idea who's going to win the Rookie of the Year. Certainly not the guy hitting 355 with, you know, a 153 OPS plus. We're just waiting for Roman Anthony to show up so we can give it to not an athletic. Like, I guess it's an open field, but at this point, we've got an AL Rookie of the Year frontrunner. I don't know if we're really in danger of that.
I don't think it's a Rookie of the Year situation so much as a Super 2 service time consideration. And the problem is that the Super 2 deadline is a fluid one. Generally, it's like the way the Super 2 deadline works is that if you want to be eligible for arbitration, you have to have 3 years of service time. However, there is a small group of players that become eligible after 2 years because, and they get kind of an extra year of arbitration because I think the number is they're in the top 22% of playing time amongst players of that year, as long as they've kind of qualify. And that generally means that like a 2 years plus either like somewhere between 120 and 132 days of service time. That's just like, that's nonsense math that no one cares about. But the problem is that the teams are kind of guessing as to like, can they hold guys down long enough to make sure they don't get Super 2 status? Because again, these teams like the Pirates, teams like, you know, like Boston, very clearly at this point, is that they don't want to get this extra year of arbitration eligibility because it ends up costing them more money down the road. Now, that doesn't bode well for their chances of extending that player, because if you think that these players don't notice that they're being held down and only because of service time, I mean, you saw what happened. I mean, Chris Bryant was a classic example when he was with the Cubs, and you know, we've seen this over and over again. If you try to manipulate a guy's service time, the likelihood you're going to keep him is very small. It is what it is. And at the same time, I think that's just what the consideration is. Now, like Caglione timing, I don't think we can put that on the Royals. Like, oh, we think that the Super 2 deadline's passed. I think they're like, we need this guy. He's really good. We're going to promote him. And that's the way I think it should be. But there are teams that have financial commitments and, you know, owners that don't like to spend, or they're, you know, they have payrolls that are already kind of bloated and they want to make sure that they're not, you know, putting themselves in a bad position long term. Again, there's like some legitimate reasons to kind of think about the Super 2 deadline, but it's not something that's easy to guess. I'm sure they have like, you know, a team, like just one guy whose job is to figure out, is to guess when that date is going to be. And based on the fact that we already seen Caglione and there's been a lot of whispers about some other guys potentially getting called up, I think that's going to be real soon. But at the same time, it's hard to pick, but that's also kind of a reason why I think some of these decisions are being made.
Yeah, 100%. And the Red Sox, honestly, we've shat on them enough. And I think we're good for now because we'll see Roman Anthony, but it does feel like they used their premature extension budget on Zidane Rafaela and on Christian Campbell. Not even saying those are bad ideas, but they were like, we have enough premature extension money to do this. We could do that one too. They did Grochet, which I wouldn't call premature, but
Devers too.
Devers as well. And getting ahead of these, and you know, Rafael is a weird one because is he the shortstop of the future without Trevor Story? He might be, but right now Trevor Story's there and he's not opting out after this season. And is Rafael an outfielder? Okay, then he's taking up space that other people can't have. You know, you're gonna have to trade Jaron Duran. And we weren't even gonna get into this yet, but we do already have comments asking about this potential Duran trade, and the Padres have been connected. Robert connected them again on yesterday's Baseball Insiders. I think the main impediment here, more so than the Red Sox shopping, is the Padres farm system, which is not exactly stocked full of what the Red Sox want. And this is not going to be Salas. I mean, it might be Salas. It's not going to be DeVries, though, right? There's no way.
If I'm the Red Sox, I don't answer the phone unless DeVries' name's in the conversation, because Salas, he's been out. And he's been hitting like 200 or worse for 2 years now. And again, I love the talent with Salas. I think he's going to take a long time. I think he's going to be a project now. He just hasn't been able to get past that hurdle for one reason or another. And again, injuries have played a part in that too. If you're the Red Sox and you have like an all-star center fielder who like got MVP votes, and I don't understand why you would ever even entertain trading him unless you're not getting a top guy back. And like after those two guys, who else do they have? They don't. They're not going to give up Jackson Merrill for him. There's literally no chance that happens, right? So I think that they really like him. Maybe they dip into the major league roster to try to facilitate that deal. But if they don't put DeVries on the table, if Boston takes a trade from the Padres that doesn't include DeVries or a DeVries level prospect, then Red Sox fans should storm Fenway. I'll say that.
Well, they will anyway, even if they take a trade, even if they get DeVries, they'll probably storm Fenway. But we'll keep our eye on that as the deadline approaches and as the Red Sox try to wedge Anthony in there, but without a long-term pact. Let's talk MLB draft a little bit, because I know how much fun you have doing it, obviously. We're watching the road to the College World Series. We are officially at the Super Regional stage. We barely evaded another wild upset last night. Ole Miss could not make the climb back, but LSU did it. They upended their tormentors at Wright State. Or no, Wright State moves on. Little Rock was the one that almost upset LSU. But no, yeah, Wright State passes Vandy. So I don't know how many draft prospects you have your eyes on there. But even with Vanderbilt, the number one overall seed, out for the tournament. We still have plenty of MLB draft prospects to keep our eyes on over the next week and beyond as we head to Omaha, hopefully. So a lot of the top seeds were damaged, but Eric, you had a few people who you had your eyes on who have survived.
Yep. I wrote about five names this morning. And the first one is Florida State's Jamie Arnold. I think that he's probably the safest pick at the number one overall pick in this year's draft. Lefty, mid-90s fastball, can throw a little bit harder, has a wipeout slider. I wish he would just throw his changeup more just because I'd like to see how hitters react to it. I think it could be a plus pitch, but he hasn't really had to. He's just one of those guys that, like, he can just throw a bunch of sliders and fastballs, and he generally just gets the job done. You know, again, from, you know, he's not a Paul Skeens level talent, even though they went to the same school. But at the same time, he's one of those guys who is going to consistently give you six innings. He'll strike out seven or eight guys. You know, he almost never put you in a bad spot, and he knows how to command his stuff. This class of college lefties is pretty wild in depth, not necessarily in, like, you know, there's not like a Steven Strasburg or a Paul Skeens in this draft, but there are a lot of just really good college arms, particularly in the left, if you're looking for a left-hander. Another one from LSU, Cade Anderson. They barely managed to get through. And Cade Anderson's going to be a guy that if they want to get through and go ahead and beat West Virginia, he's going to have to pitch well. Again, he's a little bit different. His breaking stuff isn't as good, but his changeup's really good. And it plays well off his fastball. Kind of the fastball is a similar profile, kind of, in that it plays well up the top of the zone. And, you know, when you have a changeup like that, you can get some pretty funny swings if you guess wrong. I wish the breaking stuff probably needs some work. Maybe he, you know, gets a different breaking ball shape or pivots to something else, maybe a power slider. But I he's a guy that's going to go high in the draft. He's not going to be kind of in the number one overall pick conversation unless he's taking a pretty significant discount and the Nationals want to use that money. But again, he's going to have to go against West Virginia coming up. And if he has a good showing there, maybe he puts himself in that conversation. The last college lefty, before I let you kind of figure out if there's anyone you want to talk about in terms of the pitching crop, Liam Doyle, we talked about him the last time I was on the show before I went on vacation. I don't know where to draft this guy. I don't. It's the best fastball in the draft. It's 9,900. You can't hit it. And he has a slider that's pretty good and a changeup that's okay. But the fastball is so good. And again, he came in relief last night. And other than looking like a complete psychopath on the mound, which I thoroughly enjoyed, he just looks like a guy who can get big outs in big innings all the time. And that makes me wonder, can he do that six, seven innings once, twice a week? Or is he a guy that needs to be kind of out of the bullpen? And I don't know if it matters. You know, he's that kind of good where if you have a top five pick and you're like, okay, I can get this guy, he's willing to take a discount. That's not a guarantee he would. I'm just saying that if he's willing to take a discount, you have a guy who could be a frontline starter. And the worst case scenario is you found your closer. So in terms of, like, those three college lefties, they're all left in the College World Series and all might or probably should be picked in the top 10 of this year's draft.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Yeah, you mentioned all these lefties, and obviously Doyle, if you like electricity, he could be your guy. In terms of offensive players who I want to think about or target, I mean, I know you're watching Ike Irish, and I'm curious about the comparison, or is there even a comparison, but how eventually we end up feeling about Irish versus Luke Stevenson on North Carolina, who managed to survive Oklahoma and move on, different players, of course, but high school catcher, you know, Stevenson has been projected as a collegiate catcher to go to the Phillies in the latest MLB pipeline mock draft towards the end of the first round. I'm curious about Andrew Fisher as well on Tennessee, because he's somebody who, like, keeps getting mocked. We all have our own draft particularities. I'm curious about the guys who tend to get mocked at the end of the first round to all the best teams in baseball. Because it's like, wait, like, what, everyone's certain that the best teams in baseball could all use this guy, then why isn't he higher? And, you know, so I'm always the kind of person who's like, polished collegiate bat. And when every mock draft is like, I don't know, maybe he's a Yankee or a Dodger. I'm like, all right, I should probably pay attention to that guy. What are your loose thoughts on the two catchers and Fisher?
So the funny thing here is that I don't think Irish is a catcher, right? And I think that's kind of part of the hard part in making this comparison. Now, the Phillies feels like a smart pick to take Stevenson because JT Realmuto is not a young man.
No.
He's not the same guy that, you know, 5 years ago was the best catcher in baseball. He's just not that guy anymore, and that's going to happen. And Stevenson probably is going to stick behind the plate, whereas I don't think Irish does. I mean, he's been fine, but they already had to pull him out from behind there because his back was bothering him this year, and he had to play in the outfield. What's going to get Irish drafted is his bat, and his, you know, again, it's really good bat speed. He hits the ball all over the place. Is the power a question mark? Maybe. I don't think he's going to hit 30 home runs, but I mean, are you really going to be upset if you have a left fielder who hits 300 and maybe hits 20 home runs? Again, not a fast guy, so it's kind of all hit tool. And if it's not, but it's not like, you know, the Chandler Simpson infield hit. You know, he'll hit some doubles and things like that, but is there power problems? Maybe. There are some who think that maybe with a wood bat, he's not going to do quite as much damage, but I just think the guy knows how to hit. And if you can put any amount of strength on him, that he's going to be able to get the ball over the fence. So I like Stevenson. Fisher, I like too, but he's less on my radar. Basically ask me if the Dodgers pick him because they're the team that kind of always seems to pick some college guy that I was like, why are you picking them? And it turns out they were probably smarter than me, or they picked a guy who just can't be healthy, which does happen. The last bat I had on my mind was Wahiwa Aloy out of Arkansas. I have no idea if I pronounced that name correctly. I apologize, Mr. Aloy, if I didn't.
I believe it's pronounced Caglione.
Caglione. So he's going to stick it short. Which, honestly, if you're a surefire shortstop that is going to hit at all, is going to get you in the conversation in the middle of the first round every year, especially in the SEC. I think he has probably the best bat speed in the draft, and he has real power. The question is the hit tool a little bit, because it's one of those like really uphill swings that like doesn't cross the path of the baseball as often as you'd like. And he's also really likes to swing a lot, so maybe he strikes out too much right now to get too excited about him. But when you have shortstops like that who have plus power, might hit 25 home runs a year and will also stick at the position. I don't think he's going to be a gold glover there, but he like just does the job. He's not like a guy you get the shoehorn in there either. So I like him a lot. And coming out of Arkansas, that's an organization that's a college that knows how to crank out people who know how to play in the major leagues. So, or at least really talented and have a shot at it. So he's a guy I like, but hopefully, you know, we'll kind of see how they do. And again, he's another guy, because of the position he plays, a big series against Tennessee. He's going to be on he's going to have a lot of eyeballs, and all of a sudden there's going to be a lot of teams in that top 10 are going to wonder, maybe we need to pick this guy.
You heard it here first. If you are watching Tennessee, keep your eyes on Fisher. And if he looks like a Dodger to you, then he is on Eric Cole's radar. So bring the comments if you are watching the Super Regional action. Come back to next week's show. Let us know what you think and who you have your eyes on. We'll be happy to answer any further questions and hopefully analyze a little bit. Now to the pro ranks. Those who deserve more accolades for last week. And here's where Bubba Chandler shows up in our risers for the week. It's neck and neck between him and Roman Anthony for most inexplicable, you know, AAA extended maintenance time. He's ready, as far as I'm concerned. He might be the best pitcher in AAA, and he had another week to prove it.
He did. He is a regular feature on the risers faller section on the good side. Had a start last week, 5 innings, 8 strikeouts. Just did Bubba Chandler thing. He's just throwing 100 miles an hour with somewhat regularity now. The breaking stuff's really good. Again, there is no other explanation for keeping him down other than service time. It's not, I mean, again, Jared Jones is hurt. I mean, they have Paul Skenes. The Pirates just seem to have little in the way of interest in trying to win baseball games right now, or at least are more concerned about saving what is not, ultimately not a lot of money to kind of avoid the Super 2 arbitration deadline. I don't get it. He's been really good. He's been good all year. Again, I would view. I think he's the best pitcher in AAA right now. So it's like a 2.03 ERA at AAA, and with the stuff that makes you think. If you have one quibble, it's maybe he's not as efficient as you like. He maybe walks a few too many guys, and he kind of gets to his pitch count cap in the fifth inning where you'd like to get in the sixth. But put him with major league pitching coaches, and with that have like big league plans against hitters. I think that he's going to be just fine. So beyond those two hitters, one of which is a very well-known name and the other that is not. One is Kevin McGonigal for the Tigers, you know, a prospect that we liked a lot. He missed a little bit of time. We were wondering what was going to go on with him in terms of like after his promotion. He's already being considered one of the top prospects in baseball, but the numbers really weren't there to start the season to justify that ranking. And then last week he decided to go 13 for 22 with a homer and 8 RBIs and walk 6 times and, you know, hit 3 doubles. He looked like the guy that we all thought he could be. You know, if you can find a quibble, maybe you wish he was just kind of, maybe it was a little bit more distinguishing on the base paths. Cause he certainly made a couple of blunders that cost his team. But at the same time, I mean, he put together a really nice week, and it won't be too long before he's going to be pushing for at least some sort of conversation in the career promotion. The other one is Rockies prospect Ryan Ritter. Now, I admit I am not familiar with the depths of the Rockies minor league prospects list because, frankly, it's not usually there. And, you know, they'll have a few guys who are relatively interesting at the top, and then the rest of them are just kind of very speculative because this is not a team that really knows how to draft particularly well. But Ritter's a fourth-round pick. And last month, he led all minor league baseball with 12 home runs. And last week, he hit 4 of them. Went 9 for 19, hit a triple, 10 RBI, walked more than he struck out. He's a triple A. Now, if you're the Rockies, who can't beat anybody right now, like truly anybody, why is this guy, who's absolutely raking, sitting at triple A, and then why don't you just bring him up? Other than Brenton Doyle, who do you care that much about in your outfield to not give this guy an opportunity? I just don't get it. So this is another guy who I hope gets the call up soon. If for no other reason, he's a fun name that we haven't really seen much national discussion talked about. But at the end of the day, he's been hitting really well. And again, if he's hitting a bunch of home runs all of a sudden and you put him at Coors, he's going to give you a chance as opposed to the team that the Rockies have been running at lately, which has been not.
Oh, the 10-win Rockies with a huge comeback over the Marlins last night? You're going to call them out? Yeah, okay.
Yep, yes, I'm going to do that.
Well, there you go. 10-50, Colorado Rockies. Look down in the depths. I'm actually trying to get to a Yard Goods game soon. I haven't done it yet. Got to do the old doubleheader of Alvarium Brewery and Hartford Yard Goats if you're an East Coaster. If you know, you know. If you don't, you should. So hopefully see some of you there if you want to come scout the Double A Rockies with me. I'm also going to throw out an underrated name who just got the bump to Triple A today. And I have to do my Yankees thing, so I will. Cam Schlittler. If you like righties with good extension, a well-rounded four-pitch arsenal, all pretty much above average offerings at this point, and the fastball is starting to distinguish itself. The Yankees find pitchers in weird places, and now he's getting the well-deserved bump to Triple A. So exact kind of profile they like to. Fastball plays up because of the extension, but it's 95, 96. I'm a Schlittler guy. The Yankees need more depth. Now, of course, Will Warren was sort of the talk of the town before he imploded on the mound at Dodger Stadium on Saturday. His ERA went a full point high in the sky. So that happens to Yankees prospects sometimes, especially when they're in the spotlight. So I don't know if Schlittler's getting a big league chance this year. Before September, I'm not sure, but I do know he got the bump to AAA today. Very noteworthy, in my opinion. Now, fallers for the past week, I'll add Will Warren on here, but he is still at the big league level. If you have a couple of names to bring up, including, unfortunately, someone who we've talked up on the podcast as deserving another chance despite prospect fatigue, but has now yo-yoed back down, really sporadic opportunities at the MLB level this year, and unsurprisingly, that didn't pay off for a team that's looking more like a deadline seller every day in the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Yeah. Jordan, before I kind of talk about Jordan Lawler, I want to say that Schlittler pick is a really good one, I think. When you're throwing 96 and you're basically letting go of the pitch right in front of home plate, I mean, it's big time extension out of that guy. And he's really hard, tough to hit. I do feel bad for Jordan Lawler, though. He's kind of in this in-between space where he's too good to be just sitting at AAA. But he's not hitting in the big leagues. He went 0 for 19 with three walks. And again, some of that is how Arizona has been kind of using him and kind of treating him. But at the same time, I also don't know what else I would do with him. They gave them they've given up opportunities. It hasn't worked out. He earned another opportunity in AAA this year, went up to the big leagues and was a net negative, and then he gets sent back down. I don't know what to do with this guy. I kind of feel like he needs to be included in the trade because the Diamondbacks clearly don't know how to get major league production out of him. Maybe there's a team that believes in him and would value him as such, and you'd include him in for a trade maybe at the trade deadline. Maybe you do one of those kind of buy and sell type trade deadlines where you don't necessarily, you know, get rid of everybody, but maybe you just get rid of some expiring contracts or something. That would make some sense to me. Two other names that are kind of on the downward path, I guess. One is Cooper Pratt from the Brewers. I still really like Pratt, and I thought he had a real chance of making the opening day roster for them until, you know, some weird things happened, and Caleb Durbin also kind of did his thing. And, you know, the infield picture for the Milwaukee to start the season was a bit odd, and ultimately it kind of worked out. But unfortunately, this year has been a down year for him. He only had two hits last week, and he's hitting like .230 right now. I still like him, but I would like to see some progress soon, because otherwise I'm going to have some really serious questions about whether or not he's going to have an impact bat. The other guy didn't necessarily have a down week in terms of numbers, but is in a kind of bad spot, and that's the White Sox, Hagen Smith. I love Hagen Smith, you know, like big-time stuff on the left side. I thought he had a chance of being pick number one overall until there was kind of some injury concerns in his draft year, and he moved down, you know, just a few picks. But last week it was revealed that he was throwing and dealing with a lot of elbow soreness, and the situation was so bad. He didn't have surgery, but they sent him back to – anytime you send a guy back to a minor league complex to completely overhaul one's mechanics, whether hitters or pitchers, something is fundamentally bad and needs to be fixed immediately. And this is a big – I mean, again – one of the best left-handed pitching prospects in baseball. So they very clearly realized that what he was doing was going to compromise his elbow to the point where he's going to need surgery. They didn't want to do that, so they wanted to kind of just go ahead and overhaul his mechanics. Again, a pitcher that I like a lot. I love the stuff. But I'm a little bit concerned now that you have a guy who's going back to the drawing board and can have brand-new mechanics and won't be that guy anymore. If his release point's a little bit different, you know, he's not getting the same, you know, the level of power stuff. Those are all things that matter. He might still be a good pitching prospect, but he might not be the same guy anymore. So those are kind of three guys that I was a little bit lower on this week.
Yeah, tough stuff for all three, especially when you are getting that hard reset mid-season. Plenty more to come, and join us again next week on the Prospect Show for more updates on shuffles at the minor league level, team surging, team sinking. Let's see how Ronnie Mauricio does. He is reportedly coming to the bigs with the Mets today. The Mets gain one Mauricio, lose one Jose Urania to the Dodgers in this series. Don't think that's going to matter so much, but that is a thing that happened. The Dodgers have him now as they try to run somebody else aground in that very weird bullpen. Eric Cole, thank you for joining me again today. Talk me through the draft, talking me through college ball and the last week of action. Ronnie Mauricio prediction, 7 homers this week.
I mean, that because we didn't give him as much time as Cags, very clearly he's going to go wild. For what it's worth, during his rehab stint in AAA, he was insane. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's better than we think he is, which makes me sad as a Braves fan.
Yeah, he pounded the baseball. He hit like .500 for those keeping track. So we'll maybe see Mauricio and Vientos down to the IL. The Mets, big win last night. Good, continuing on a good surge. And it made Eric just stick his tongue out sideways like an aging pug that's losing control of its teeth. Thank you for joining us on the show. Again, the Moonshot, please subscribe. Get that to your email or read it on the Baseball Insiders feed on fansider.com. That's fansider.com/baseball-insiders. I want to toss it to one question before we sign off too, asking how much we should be concerned about the last 2 weeks of Braden Montgomery while we are talking about the White Sox. Overall, the season numbers are still there, Eric. And I think anyone can have a bad week, 2 week stretch. Although if you're coming off a major injury and non-participatory season and switching organizations, I get the concern, but right now I'm not very high on the concern list here. I don't know where you're at.
I think it's more just adjusting to, you know, pitchers are like, they know what works and what doesn't work against him. And he's kind of going through one of those adjustment periods right now. I haven't seen anything per se. Again, I was on vacation last week, so I didn't really get to see a lot of games last week. But I think that I wouldn't be too worried about Braden Montgomery is the short version of the story. I don't think his injury is something that's a long-term problem. And I don't think his injury is the cause of like any struggles that he's having. He looked great to start the year. I suspect that he's going to be just fine. Just, you know, it's a pretty small sample of games. I really wouldn't worry too much about it. Especially, like, again, talk to me next month, and if he's still not hitting, then they might have a problem.
And we hopefully will talk to you next month. We've seen you in the comments before. We'd love to see you back again. Thank you for the question. We will be back on the Baseball Insiders Prospect Show next Tuesday. Stay tuned on the channel. Turn on your notifications for Robert Murray and myself tomorrow at 1 Eastern time. Then no show Friday. Back at it next week. But a private Q&A in the Discord on Thursday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern. We'd love to see you there before the trade deadline. We are getting closer. Not close, but closer. Until then, until next show, thanks for watching. Eric and I will see you next week.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.